IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of All Things Policy. I'm your host, Apoorv Kumar. I'm the Staff Program Manager at Takshashila. I manage the Postgraduate Program in Public Policy, which is a 48-week long program. And, you know, I have already spoken in earlier episodes that the application process for the PGP cohort has started. So if you're interested in public policy, then please sign up for the PGP program. Today, we will be talking about a very unique situation and a very unique issue regarding COVID-19 and other sort of prospective of future risks or pandemic. We will be talking about the risk communication and the risk communication policies in India, especially at the time of pandemic or any other disaster. And to talk about these policies and about this issue, I have with me Mehak Nankani. Mehak is Assistant Program Manager at Takshashila. She manages our health and life sciences program. Welcome, Mehak. I think this is your first time at ATP.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having me here. I'm grateful.
Thanks, Mehak. Before we delve into the topic, could you talk about the HLS program? And I think the application process is also live.
Yeah, so this GCPP Health and Life Sciences program is a 12-week program, and it's actually meant for people who want to get equipped with tools to analyze health and life science policies. And the curriculum we have, like at the GCPP HLS, it's very diverse, starting from economics of vaccination to clinical trials policy. And we also deep dive into public health and economics of it. So the applications for it are open. And so people who want to avail the early bird scholarship can register before 4th of December of 2021. And the next cohort starts on 15th January 2022.
Thanks, Mehak. Let's get straight into the topic, Mehak. And you have also written a note or a paper on risk communication, right? And we have seen during the first wave or during the second wave, and even when our vaccination sort of, you know, policy kick-started, you know, this summer, we saw a lot of miscommunication or lack of communication, I would say, from the administration side or from the government side, right? And because of this vacuum, a lot of misinformation also crept into a sort of, you know, normal discourse regarding COVID-19 and vaccination. I also remember a lot of sort of communication mishappenings that happen, you know, during those press conferences from the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare. I very vividly remember that in one of the charts that I think the secretary was showing, they said that, you know, by May 2021, there will be zero cases, but we knew what happened in May and June 2021, right? Which means that there was complete lack of any coherent communication with the citizens about pandemic, about the policies, about the strategy on how to address pandemic and other outbreak and also lockdowns. So help us understand, Mehak, what is risk communication and why is it so significant at the time of pandemic or any other disaster?
Yeah, so I think before understanding risk communication, it is very important to understand and define risk. So in layman's term, a risk is any condition or a possibility or an event that has negative consequences. And any scenario, possibility, or event that has the potential to have negative implications for human health and life on a broad scale is referred to as a public health risk. So if we go to particular definitions of defining risk communication, so it is just like real-time exchange of information, advice, opinions, which come from experts, most probably political leaders or officials or public health experts. And these communication messages are directed to people who face a threat or a hazard and who are at risk and their survival is threatened and their economic or social well-being is threatened. So it becomes extremely important in a situation of risk for an effective risk management strategy, because only a proactive public communication system will actually help in mitigating, in preparedness, in detection. And it's also very necessary to understand that risk communication cannot be generalized. How people respond to a particular situation and risk is dependent on how they perceive the risk associated with that. But perceptions of the people are actually never forced. They're always voluntary, sometimes, of course, irrational, and are formed by one's cultures, one's values, beliefs, social environment, the way they have been brought up. And an effective risk communication plan is not only based on the evidence, but keeps the perceptions of people in a loop. And an empathetic approach with developing a communication plan always encourages people to do what is needful. And taking example of a public health emergency in particular to COVID-19, this is an unprecedented situation. And there was a state of confusion which could only be solved with the right and timely communication. And with an expanded role in pandemic planning and response, communication processes actually prepare the public to adapt to fastly changing circumstances, events, or even uncertainty around. And it also helps to facilitate anticipation of surprising events, create dialogue, not only amongst people, but also amongst experts and people. And that is why it's extremely important to have communication in times of crisis, because it includes technical information, trust between the government, between the leaders and the people. And it also somehow sustains credibility. And it actually shows that the leaders or officials care for the people.
Interesting. I think the key word was credibility, Mehak. And there was a massive credibility crisis because the citizens were not getting proper sort of communication or information about the outbreak or about the, you know, about other strategies. Can you help us understand, or can you call out some of the risk communication strategies, both during first phase or during second phase, and help us sort of divide it into two categories: communication, risk communication that backfired, and risk communication that actually helped citizens understand the pandemic and the lockdowns. So both kind of strategies that have worked and that didn't work.
Okay, so the public health events in the past, which had occurred in the past few decades, had shown all of us that a timely and effective risk communication acts actually help in facilitating and managing the situations on ground by minimizing the number of casualties, minimizing the number of risks, deaths and everything. And in India also, the government, the people in power actually tried at their own different levels, tried to engage in some of the other kinds of communication methods. Some worked and some did not work. So let me just start with telling how the communication strategies which were planned did work, and it was done for the very first time in India. For example, let's just start with something very known like Arogya Setu. And in April 2020, the government of India launched Arogya Setu, which was an official smartphone app for tracing, for mapping, and for self-assessment. And to actually my surprise, in a day, we had over, like, even actually in 2 weeks, we had over 50 million downloads of the single app. And the application was, which was, of course, made mandatory for everybody to download, actually encouraged community-led tracing and also helped in limiting the rate of virus propagation. Also, of course, there was a debate about app's usefulness, India's tele-density and data security. And all of these, of course, have been point of contention. But we need to understand that the app was made available in more than 10 languages. And it was an admirable attempt in itself. And similarly, the active use of social media. So from the very beginning of the pandemic, actually much before the lockdown was announced in March 2020, in February, the Twitter account for Ministry of Health and Family Welfare actually started putting up posts regarding the pandemic. Before actually it was declared a pandemic, they started putting up posts on cases around the world. There were initial status of virus, screening of people who were coming from different countries and airlifting Indians from other countries. And similarly, in March, the Twitter account for the ministry actually focused on tweeting more than 100 tweets, both in Hindi and English, concerning the spread of the virus. There was information about ventilator facilities. There was information about how quarantining, self-quarantining, house quarantining. There was information on sanitizing and health etiquettes that one needs to follow. And all of these topics were discussed much in detail in all of those tweets. Also, similarly on other social media sites, is for example, Instagram, there was a lot of public leaders came out and started communicating to people on a very large level, asking them to self-isolate themselves if they are feverish, if they have symptoms of the virus. And all of it was done for the very first time in India. We have seen, like, before India had faced Zika virus, we had a swine flu a decade back. But all of these things, especially the use of social media, was done very first time. And one thing which I personally really liked was use of qualitude. So, of course, I know the listeners would remember, like, in the beginning of the pandemic, there was a caller tune, of course, in various regional languages. The caller tune spoke about how one needs to maintain social distancing 2 feet apart and why one needs to wear a mask. And similarly, the communication changed over a period of months, right? Like, moving in December and January, when India had its own vaccine and we had our own vaccination plan, we saw that, we could hear that caller tunes talked about how, why one needs to get vaccinated. And it was made available in a lot of different regional languages. So it kept changing over a period of times. And this was actually done for the very first time in India. That actually worked. For example, if one is not readily using social media, Twitter more prominently, there is a higher possibility that they have phones. So caller tunes actually worked. And similarly, television, for example, the communication messages via television were excellent with respect to their clarity, consistency, and focus on actions. The action part was remarkably taken up, and this was a part which is often missed and left to the community to make sense. The videos which were broadcasted, then were short and long videos, both of them, which were broadcasted on national television, were critical and raising public awareness. And it's also necessary to understand that all of these videos which were airing and before the virus swept throughout the country and before the WHO labeled it pandemic, did actually make people aware that something is wrong, which is wrong happening in the world. And that is how they asked people to have their own washing and respiratory etiquettes. They asked people to stay away from someone who is suffering from cold and fever and other kinds of infection. The promptness with which these videos were prepared under the name for, like, help us to help you, were adapted and modified, and which is actually worth appreciation. Moving ahead, like, even we know that there is still vaccine hesitancy amongst the larger public in the country, one also needs to understand that the national response plan, which was made in terms of vaccine, which actively included a lot of local organizations which are working with the people. And it has really helped for people to get up and take vaccines. So with limited time in hand, with limited resources in hand, the Union government took all of these essential steps for contacting and collaborating with different people, with using different media platforms, both traditional and the new forms of media, to expedite its communication strategies. So one of these things actually worked, but one also needs to understand that the communication strategy which was devised and how it was implemented was it's full of a lot of botches. And so one actually needs to understand that, where did we actually go wrong? So for example, let's just start with very basic. In the beginning, we had, like, of course, PM Narendra Modi's Janta Curfew, which was followed by Tali and Thali Vajao initiative. Of course, it was a great way to show our appreciation for the frontline workers. But the key point on why actually people were supposed to do it was missing. And this actually had its own set of consequences. Like, in several places across the country, instead of people staying in their homes banging the utensils or ringing the bells, the curfew ended up with larger groups of people just going on roads for acknowledging the efforts of healthcare staff, police and media professionals. And of course, such was not a desired outcome. And there was clear lack of clarity in the communication on the intent of why we need to practice social distancing. And this actually disregarded the gravity of the issue. And people who were supposed to be homebound during that event, the severity of the event was lowered, and a lot of people treated it as a festival. They started celebrating it and being very oblivious to the risk, which clearly shows that they weren't told on why they were supposedly to be doing it. They were just told that they should be doing it. And moving on, like, for example, social distancing. The concept of social distancing is immensely new and very alienating to most people in the country. There was a barrage of messages happening on television, newspapers, social media, urging people to practice it, but none of them explained it, what was it or why one needs to do it. Even the term quarantine was never explained in any communication message with utmost rationality and logic. I remember in the beginning of the lockdown, at least in a couple of months after the lockdown was announced, weeks actually, people started placing all of those hashtags on Instagram, on GIFs, turning self-quarantining, social distancing, on all social media, and particularly Snapchat and Instagram, because it was so ambiguous and widely used that they didn't realize why they were doing it. Also, one needs to understand that this all came up with a privilege. Hundreds of thousands of workers, daily wage laborers, who were supposed to move back home during the lockdown, not caring about the physical proximity at that point in time. And no kind of social distancing was followed. The messages overflowing with an urge to practice it did not acknowledge the fact that it would be impossible for an average Indian who earns a daily wage to practice it because, of course, they have limited amount of resources and facilities at hand. Also, one of course, moving on with one of the most, as you also spoke about, misinformation. I just want to quote WHO. Like, a few months back, WHO termed COVID-19 pandemic as an infodemic, because there was so much information prevalent across all social media sites that people didn't know on what was right and what was wrong. And this actually brings us to a very important fact, which is called centralization of source of news. The spread of misinformation within pandemic, of course, is known to one and all, but one needs to understand why it happened, since there was no one official statement or press release which were happening from one direct source on a daily basis. People started to look for information everywhere, and hence everybody had their own cures. People were supposedly telling to not to eat chicken because, of course, it was told that it spreads the virus, and we had these immunity boosters and we were told that it helps us from getting the virus or actually getting cured of it. And all of this happened because there was no one particular guide. And there was no one clear communication on what needs to be done, which clearly lacked. And moving on, another aspect and essential concept, which I thought was missing in all of the communication, at least most of the communication messages, was that, okay, pandemic is, of course, not known to everybody. People still don't know the difference between pandemics and epidemics and other kinds of infectious diseases. And all of these scientifically rigorous terms and material needed to be translated for a layman person in a very plain language that could have been understood by one and all. And the Union government's messaging on how to wash hands, why it's important, what a virus is, how it spreads, and specifics on pneumonia happening or black fungus, which actually became prevalent during the second wave. They weren't broken down into very simpler terms. And a common man who is unaware of all of these concepts will not be able to do what is required until she or he learns why should it be done. People were urged to wear masks. or at one point double mask, but many did not actually comprehend why they needed to do so. And as a result, did not appreciate the or understand the gravity of the situation.
Thanks, Meg. I think that's a very detailed sort of, you know, description of what went wrong and what worked, what didn't work. At this point, we'll take a short break. And after this break, I will ask, I'll be interested in understanding whether state-level risk communication strategies mattered or were there any different patterns of different states communicating about pandemic differently. So let's take a break. And after the break, we'll talk about this aspect. Okay, welcome back. So Meg, you were talking about, you know, the risk communication strategies by Indian government and Ministry of Health and Family Welfare. Different states reacted very differently, right? And that's why we had very different strategies and, you know, the way they handled during the first wave and second wave. Can you pinpoint, you know, can you just briefly tell us how one state differed from other state? Just give one example of a state that you know, handled the situation very carefully, and the situation and another state that actually sort of, you know, bungled and there's a botched approach.
Yeah, so I have quite a few examples, but I'll just stick to one. For example, if we look at how Kerala handled its cases, and of course at one point in time Kerala had the highest number of cases in the country because they were doing a lot of tests. But it was how Kerala's CM addressed the people every day at 6 p.m., providing them information on the rise of the number of cases, the initiatives that were done on ground, and the actualities of the number of people who lost their lives or the number of hospital beds available. And these daily 6 p.m. press meets by the sessions with the Kerala CM actually became a staple diet for most of the Keralites. They used to wait every day for him to address the people of the state. And that is how there was most of the times there was, and he actually asked people to understand the severity of the situation and to follow the lockdown, and was giving them very transparent updates on the number of cases and vaccines and even beds. And even during the second wave, he was very transparent in his approach. Contradicted to this, if we move up north and if we move to the state of Uttarakhand, just before the second wave, we had the Mahakumbh in Haridwar. And it was actually the state CM who urged people to come in heavy numbers, perform the rites, take selfies actually, and upload it on social media. And there was no real communication on why. Even like there was no communication on whether people actually needed a negative certificate, actually people needed a vaccine certificate. Nothing was done. And therefore, huge numbers came, and we know what the consequence was. Like the number of cases just went and spiked. And so there was clear lack of communication, and like there were two different approaches. Similarly, Maharashtra did a lot. The communication was very transparent, was very fast, was actually... The information was broken down into plain, simple language for people to understand, urging them to stay in their homes until and unless it's not required to step out. But if we see on a lot of other, as I gave the example of Uttarakhand, it wasn't done. And hence, people did not understand the gravity of the issue and did not understand how severe it was. And we know what happened after May. The second wave was very disastrous.
Right, right. Quickly also, can you tell me what is the role of data that was being shared by these press releases and press conferences? How important is the data, especially during pandemic? And, you know, a lot of controversy erupted about the number of deaths, number of casualties. But how important is the role of data in the risk communication?
Data actually is very, very important because it makes people understand on what is happening on the ground. If you tell people that just one person had the casualty and in actuality 100 people died, people will not understand the seriousness of it and will not go deep dive into it. And that is how it's very important for governments at all levels to be very transparent with the data. I remember during the second wave, one of the northern states reported that just 5 cases were coming from the capital city, but which was not the case. There were thousands and like tens of thousands of cases of people being positive. And that is how data plays a very, very important role. And similarly, we had a lot of sources and people just didn't know which data to trust. And that's why it's important for the people whom we have elected, whom we have voted for them to be very, very transparent and very fast in telling us on the data and what is actually happening on the ground.
Right, right. This is the last and concluding part, Mehak. Could you sort of pinpoint or what would be your top three or four recommendations, policy level recommendations for a seamless and for an effective risk communication for any future pandemic or any future disaster?
So India already has a national risk communication plan, and it just does not relate to public health emergencies, but also we have disasters happening. And so risk communication or crisis communication is important at every risk involved. And I also think that one country, whether it's India or whether it's any other much more developed nation, we will never be totally prepared for crisis such as this. But however, one thing that we can do to lessen the likelihood of fatal outcomes is to communicate well. And this can only be done if it is done in a timely manner and simple enough for people to comprehend. Second, India is a very, very diverse country with people from various cultural, ethical, moral beliefs and with various languages. So there cannot be just one diversification of communication plan which is generalized and which is vertical and which has a top-down approach. People will not take it seriously. And of course, the communication plans will fail miserably. So since a lot of people are important stakeholders, and these are the people whose lives and social and economical well-being are at risk, so it becomes important for one to understand and include to make a very inclusive communication policy, where it's just not the officials or the experts who tell people to do something. It's actually coming from the people. They need to be included in the communication plan, because otherwise they will not take you seriously. If they don't comprehend what you are saying, they will not do it, because how I perceive risk might be very different from a Z person perceiving risk. And that is how it cannot be generalized. It has to be inclusive. Third point is that it should be, we should always calculate and include the feedback of our communication plans to see what went right, where did we go wrong. And during the pandemic, like how I spoke about, there were a lot of ups and downs, but we still don't know. It was just, until unless we read about it, we still don't know whether the communication messages which were meant to the larger public, did it reach them? We know that there's still vaccine hesitancy. People, even after two disastrous waves, people are still not wearing masks. There is no social distancing being followed. So one needs to understand and has to have a retrospective approach on seeing whether the communication messages reached them and where did we go wrong. And in future also, in order to respond effectively, the union governments need to recognize the importance of an all-inclusive two-way feedback and have an all-inclusive approach for a communication plan to be successful for a country as diverse as India. Yeah, otherwise we know the history will repeat itself.
Right, the history will repeat itself if we don't focus on these aspects. Thank you, Mehak. I think that was a great conversation, very insightful. Something that we have not spoken about. We have spoken about vaccine policy, we have spoken about all other aspects of pandemic, but we have not spoken about this very important issue and a very integral issue. Thanks for this conversation, and I hope you had a lovely time chatting with me.
I did. This is something I'm extremely passionate about, health communication and risk communication. So thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you, Mehak. And thanks, listeners, for tuning in. We will be back with another exciting episode of All Things Policy. Do check our public policy courses.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, If you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle at TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.